You guys talk about your craft, and you know, I think you know that you are one of my all-time favorite costume designers, hands down. And what you have done here, and what follows through with your production design, color, color, color tells the story here. The use of greens, tying the Banks family together, the reds, the blues, the red vest on Jack, with the red hat on Mary Poppins, and the bits of red in either one coat or within the striping. Stripes themselves, geometrics, and then all of your gorgeous production design turning present-day London into 1930s London, and then creating everything within the Banks house that harkens back, that ties in with Sandy's costume, harkens back to the first film, all the touches of things in the attic that we once saw in the nursery when the Banks children were little. How did the two of you collaborate and come together for this synergistic masterpiece? Because that's the word for it.
Well, I just saw the finished film a week ago, and one of my favorite things was seeing the green motif you had on the Banks family.
I know. Well, okay, and I'm going to have to own up, and I didn't know I was doing it at the time. I didn't consciously think I'm going to put each one of them into green. And it was only when someone had seen some stills and actually got in touch with me, and I think it was an interview of something, but they'd only seen stills. And they said, so, you know, tell us about the Green Banks family. I said, what Green Banks family? They said they're all wearing green. Then I thought about it and looked back and thought, oh, they are. It was kind of subliminal. I like green. And I think it's actually it's a very 1930s colour. Do you know what I mean?
It is,
it's very
absolutely.
Much of yeah. the time, of the yeah. period. And I guess a lot of the period clothes I was looking at had green. So
well,
it
so
works. It does
work
bring them together. And
well.
I work on it. And that is actually always with colours
particularly.
Isn't
that lovely when it all comes
yeah.
together?
And I do work instinctively. I tend to not overthink it, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. So.
And of course, green metaphoric for money, which they're lacking.
I didn't really realise that, but yeah. But also, but how we work together. But obviously, we were fortunate enough to be all under the same roof
yes.
for the entire time, from day one of pre-production to the final day of shooting, and be around the rehearsal period. So I was able to see everything that John was doing as he was, you know,
and we talk about
through
color
every stages, and
we
talk about
beginning.
Color and everything. So I knew what the colors he was using in the interior. So I knew what world mm-hmm. that my, you know, my characters.
So
colours that they
we were
would be
eager
in.
To
so,
share
so, yes,
wallpapers
so,
and fabrics.
So that's actually how it works. It's
yeah.
just sharing information and being... Because sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're in a different country from... You know, the production designer could be in another country working while the costume designer's somewhere else. And
we're all at
completely,
Shepherd
yeah, it's mm-hmm. So it really, really helps.
So it's easy to bump into each other when new ideas come up
yeah.
to talk.
You know, I'm curious, how does the production design in structurally interweave with the costume design from a structural standpoint? Because I know you went through this with Cinderella and volume, and production design had to accommodate volume of clothing and the actual, in terms of doorways or tables or things that are there. How did that impact either of you at all with this production?
Well, I think something that you and I shared was dancing, the needs
no,
for dance.
No, of course. Yes.
Because the sets actually kind of grow and contract and become more specific as Rob Marshall, who's the choreographer with John DeLuca, as well as being the director, creates a dance. I mean, the first thing I do as a production designer with Rob is I put together a dance hall mm-hmm. and get rehearsal props. Mm. I mark out with tape what I think the set's going to be and different levels. And he's like an artist going to work his dance hall as kind of his blank canvas. And as this is going through, surfaces are always incredibly important. And for me, how the dancers interact with, because in our movie, there's glass surfaces and stone surfaces and wood surfaces, but they all have to be treated in a way that the dancers can dance correctly. You have one type of stickiness for one type of dance, another slickiness for another. And I know that's something that's very complicated for you. And then also just movement
well,
and clothes.
It is. I mean, especially on especially those surfaces, the cobbles for Emily in heels. I mean, for the guys, for all the Learys dancing, they had comfortable flat shoes. And Emily had to do the same stuff in heels and jump off a wall in heels.
Yes.
And that was all. So we had to have several different heights of shoe made for her.
You and shoes.
To do, I know. Well, this, shoes are so important so that she could do those things. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, dancing on those cobbles must have been really hard for her.
Yes.
So.
Well, you know, I have to ask you, you mentioned dancing on the cobbles, and of course, the signature, one of the two big signature pieces in the film is, of course, the Lamplighter's Dance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to light fantastic. What did you go through as a production designer to create? That is that set is amazing to accommodate the BMX bikers coming down with everybody up on poles, on the ground, on the fountain. You're making great what normally would be negative space in filming. You've expanded and you're using all of it, and you've got to design all of that.
Well, we knew it needed to be a place that was in London, that was hidden in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked about maybe it was a disused underground station, maybe it was a zoo. And we ended up with this idea that, because we loved Regent Park so much and Kew Gardens, what if there was this little place that was a combination, a teeny one of Kew Gardens and Regent Park, that for some reason a section of it just got padlocked and it was just left for 50 years. And so that was the basic idea we had going in. And we had these ideas of a greenhouse or fountain or ramps and different levels and stone surfaces and glass surfaces. So we started out with simple illustrations, and then we did a model, and then we went into this rehearsal process where we created a giant dance floor. And we marked out the set full size, and we built ramps, and we built fountains. And as they started dancing and learning the set changed and grew and morphed. The idea of the bicycles came in a little later. The inspiration for the whole dance number is Lin-Manuel's character, Jack, who's a lamplighter.
Mm-hmm.
And the tools of his trade are a bicycle and a ladder that he opens up to get up to the lamps and his lighting stick. And the idea would be, what could we use of that to make it something fun with the dance?
Mm-hmm. Much like they did in the original with the chimney sweeps. And
exactly
the chimney
rooms. Yeah, a complete nod to that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love, because with the costuming, with the production design, we have those touchstones to the past. That is there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just warms the heart to see it all. But I'm curious, and I'd ask Rob about this, finding that balance between creating the new and moving it forward while bringing in touchstones from the past in terms of color and design and the tangible, tactile things, that the signature items everybody thinks of when they think of Mary Poppins, unless they've read the books and then they think of a lot more.
Yes. What was the question?
Well, you know, about finding that balance so that you don't go too far into 1964. Version.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I don't know about you, John, but I just watched it once at the beginning. I mean, I of course, most of it's ingrained in my memory anyway, because like Rob and probably most of us, it was the first film I saw in a theater. What I think must have been the year it came out. And, you know, you realize as an adult, you know all the words to all the songs and you know so many of the images. So it was there, but I didn't know. Of course, there was lots that I'd forgotten about. I'd watched it just once, just to sort of watch it, think, okay, now put it out of my mind and now do our own version updated to 1934. But then looking back, I've realized that there are lots of nods to the original film. I mean, from my point of view, I've done lots of things that sort of, you know, reflect or, you know, honor or, you know, it's a play homage to sort of sometimes not noticing. I mean, one of the things is going back to the big dance scene. Julie Andrews in the original dances on the roof of them, and she wears a red coat, and it's the only time she wears a red coat in the whole film. And I suspect that was so that she stood, you know, it was so that she stood
that
out, because
sense,
if she'd been in her navy blue, she would have looked the same as all the guys.
Right.
And it's night, and we wanted to see her, so that's why I switched Emily, you know, out of her blue coat into the red suit. And so that was the little sort of, that was her Julie Andrews on the roof moment in that.
And what about for you, John, in terms of bringing these little pieces of design in so that we have the touchstones, but it's not just, okay, we just lifted this right out of 1964.
Well, I had exactly the same experience as you, Sandy.
Yeah.
It was the first film I saw and loved it, and obviously had made a big impression on me as a child. And when I started the project, I watched the film once, and then I kind of put it down. But my first meeting with Rob, he said, we're making our movie. We're not recreating Mary Poppins. We're making our movie, and the story is so different. You know, our story opens up, you know, in winter London during their version of the Depression, during the slump. And it's a scary world that we come into and that we see the Banks family in. I mean, almost the first moment of the film is that repossession notice being nailed on the door. So it's a whole different story. And being a different story, we are going to create a different design.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have to ask about the other huge number, that exquisite, the animated, the 2D animated sequence. And the costumes on display out there. Sandy, those fabrications of the heavier, almost canvas that's painted and then balanced with the bustle in the back. This is chiffon. Gorgeous! And who but you would think to use like a canvas and paint on it? And by the same token, the imagination in that Royal Doulton, the set, the stage set, done very theatrically. You know, just as if you're watching Lynn up on stage on Broadway.
Well, the costumes are really the standout. I was lucky enough to be there when you came in and pitched it to Rob.
Yeah, it was very early on. It was the first. Yeah. It was the first idea I had. Was okay, we're going to do this animation sequence. How to? And it just came to me. I thought, let's make the costumes look like they've been painted by the animators. And I didn't want the live action characters to stand outside of the animated world, which is what I think they do in the original. That's what, I mean, I love the original. I love what she's wearing in the original, but there is something, it just, and it's old-fashioned, but it looks like they're removed from it. And I actually wanted to make them more integrated into that background world.
And we had talked for weeks before you came in and joined us in London about how could we do that. So
right.
It was something that were all worried about.
Yeah.
And then you walked in and said, well, this is what I'm going to do. And our eyes just became
this is what I'm going to try to do. I thought, let's see if it works. Let's see if I paint them to look like they're 2D. And let's see if it works. And so we did lots of experiments with my painting team. And actually, you know, you do things and you look at it like that. But then when you photograph it, it suddenly looks really weird. It really does look like... It looks like they're you know, the fairground when you have those... You know those cartoon characters with a hole and you put your head through?
Yeah.
It looks like that, except they're moving and it's 3D, 2D. And I was actually, very thrilled with the results, I have to say.
Well, it's so exciting. The idea is so creative, exciting. And it's one thing getting the idea, and then the other thing, realizing it.
Yeah.
I can only imagine how hard that was, the amount of testing.
The painters,
going
and I had a great team of painters.
And of course, then the color palette in there in the Royal Doulton Museum sequence.
Yeah.
That's totally different than anything else that we're seeing until we get to that third act in the fair, but then it's not the vibrancy of the purple and the pink.
Yeah. I mean, I love the end sequence, the color in that is fantastic. And it is, but it's different fantastic color,
right,
isn't it, to the music hall, which is the purples and the pinks are just.
The idea of what we are going for. It was that of the real world at the beginning was this cold, gray place that they felt uncomfortable in. And then Mary Poppins comes in and they go into these fantasies and everything is so colorful. But then at the end, the two merge. So it's interesting to talk about, but the fair, the spring fair at the end, is the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's also mingled with Mary Poppins' magic, because if you pick the right balloon... Mm-hmm. You go up.
I think it looks extraordinary, that end scene, because it's just, you know, I mean, that is filled with extras wearing real clothes. They're real clothes from the period, but it just, the way that everything comes together with everything that you've done, with all like the awnings and the, you know, everything, that sort of candy colored.
We just brought
sort of
in the
world.
Candy colors of spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the beautiful
looks,
greens and the pinks.
It
and
just
all.
Looks so lovely. It's so uplifting for the end.
The gorgeous the sidewalk chalk drawing as you enter.
Oh, yeah.
The fair.
I'm so glad you noticed that.
Yes.
Okay, talk about things that you want to do as a little nod.
Yes.
I started tearing up when I saw that last night. There was a physical nod to Bert and his drawings.
Well, I'm about to tear up now because that was
so
a very last minute
thing. Okay, who do you think this is going to appeal to most? Like our generation, who saw it the first time round. I'm really excited to know what kids.
I'm
really excited
to
know
what
the little
kids
think. I mean, I always have the little kids in mind when I'm designing, obviously, right. But, you know, but everybody I talk to is our age loving it, and I'm really interested to know what the kids are going to
think.
Well,
I saw kids at the Fox screening, and they just had the biggest smiles.
Oh, really?
Smiles.
Wow.
I
great.
Mean, their smiles are like Cheshire
I'm
cats.
Really interested to see which bits they like the best,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, how do you not smile at this film? As I told Lin-Manuel, I said, Lin, I said, every time you're on screen and you smile,
yeah,
the only word you think of is happiness. Yeah.
That's such a nice moment when Jane says, I remember you, you're that little boy with the smile.
Yeah.
And you look up,
yeah.
And there's Jack, and he has an 8-year-old boy's
yeah.
smile.
Dimple.
And he's got that this look of like everything, anything could happen in this
but
world.
Even when he doesn't smile, he's got that twinkle in his
yeah.
eye.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's got a twinkle.
Yeah, one of the important things with this film is between the two of you, you find a great balance between the scope of the production design, which goes from very grand, be it Topsy's shop, which is stunning. And again, green. Must be a family color.
I think probably should go through all my films. I think there's quite a bit.
It makes it very easy for a production designer because I know part of the color palette.
You know, yeah. Part of the color palette. But so we've got Topsy's, you know, and we have the grandeur and scope of the fantastic dance. We have the undersea. We have the Royal Dalton. But then, as grand and fantastical as you can both make things, you hold in an intimacy. And I'm curious how the two of you manage to find that balance between the grandeur and the fantasy and the intimate moments in your respective works.
Well, it's the intimate moments that are the story. The story is in a funny way an intimate story between these children and their father. So the design represents that
I
as well.
I suppose it does. And I suppose in terms of costume, I think intimate, I mean, it's about the detail and about it not being overcomplicated, I think. I mean, if you think intimacy within the family, like the kids and Michael, I mean, they're just wearing regular, ordinary clothes from mm-hmm. the period. And it's just about seeing the texture and the detail and it not being overcomplicated or not being anything fancy or not being distracting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's about not making it distracting for those moments.
Yeah, and once
as opposed to sort of like the wild, you know, the fantasy painted costumes and stuff like that, which is, you know.
Yeah. And once again, your textile, your fabrications are just stunning with the wools and the knobbier, heavier woolen coats on the children and the short pants and the cotton, the broadcloth kind of texture there. Beautiful fabrications.
And beautiful sweaters, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's all about the knitwear, the 1930s, actually.
Were they hand... Did you find...
Oh, everything's hand... No, because... Well, no, you... I mean, you find ones, but they're usually all moth-eaten. But then you need loads for kids. When if you got three kids...
Yeah.
I mean, we have three kids with their photo doubles, their stunt doubles, their acting doubles. So they all have to have replica outfits. And then the kids all grew. And then you have to be aware that you have to be aware. No, we're always like having to let the pants down.
Because this was a longer shoot.
Yes,
yeah.
Because they do, especially the little ones. The little one, Georgie, he grew several inches. And you suddenly realise, oh my God, his pants are far too short now. You know what I mean? You don't notice, and then you suddenly notice.
It starts out with all the children being dragged through mud, and then ends with them growing 3 inches.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of duplicates.
Well, before Joe takes me, I just have to ask you, for each of you, a signature moment for your respective designs of which you are most proud of.
I can tell you my favorite parts of your design.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's like, it's a whole, in a way, for me. I'm very, very proud of the movie.
It really is. I don't think we can, you know, it's like asking somebody who their favorite child is. You know, someone with a big family, who's your favorite child? You don't have one. You like individual things. I mean, you know, I like every, you know, I love the music hall moment, but then I also love Mary Poppins' arrival because actually, for me, that was the one thing I had to really get right. The rest of it was invented, but that was the moment that, well, everyone has to know that this is Mary Poppins, but she's different, but the same. I guess that was
for me.
I think her arrival
is Mary Poppins' hats were my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
All
the birds,
wonderful things.
The little bluebirds you put on the hats.
Robins.
That nodded to a spoonful of sugar.
Exactly, that was right.
The
and then I hope no one thinks it's that one dead, but It's just a little. It's another one.
Something that I was a part of that I'm very proud of too was Mary Poppins' parrot head umbrella.
Yes.
Because we didn't refer at all to the original movie. Everything in our movie wanted to be dipped in reality. Mm-hmm. So I wanted it to look like it was something you'd find in an antique store.
Yeah.
So it had to be carved out of wood, and if we could put in some ebony, and if there's some ivory, and maybe some little metal filigree to it. So we made it looking like a really beautiful, real umbrella. But we also wanted it to be magical. So it's an audio animatronic. It actually spoke and moved and winked on set. And
that's something. That's an achievement.
So you could hold it, and the battery pack was hidden, and all the transmitters were hidden.
Did somebody else operate it, or did Emily operate it herself?
No. There was a puppeteer.
Oh, right.
That was right next. That would actually...
I didn't even know that.
Well, so it could turn its head, it could wink, it could speak, obviously. But we had a really good little puppeteer with it that would do at the beginnings. Once we started shooting, we were doing pre-records, but initially he could just talk and make it work. And we were 3 weeks into the movie, and it took a long time to get done. And once the movie starts, it's very hard to show things to a director. So I'd been standing around for three days trying to show this officially to the director. But he was going to shoot in a couple days, and he had to see it. So I walked by him while he was shooting on Cherry Tree Lane in the midst of a very busy scene, and I just handed him the umbrella. He said, "What is this?" And the parrot looked up at Rob and said, "Hello, Rob. How are you doing?" And winked. And Rob went, "Oh, my God. Oh, my God." He called, stopped everything, called the children over, and the kids had a three-minute conversation with Mary Poppins' cane.
Mm. Oh, my God. Okay, that is your crowning achievement.
Why? Where's the pirate? Why is he not being interviewed?
I don't know.
They bring
what a clever
BBA,
idea.
They bring BBA
Why not?
And, to Star Wars junkets, and he interacts with everybody. You got shortchanged here. The parrot got shortchanged.
The parrot's very shy, though.
How many were there?
Well, there was actually only one that fully functioned.
Oh, so that's
there was
probably
only one.
Okay, so that's under lock and key right now.
It's probably under lock and key.